The Science Basement!
Hello and welcome to the Science Basement podcast, a podcast for those who love all things science. I'm Rhiannon, your host for today, and joining me as co-host is someone you know very well, Anastasia.
Hi everyone.
Today it's time for the third episode of our High Life mini-series. As a recap, High Life is one of the major life science institutions in the Nordics and is based in Helsinki, Finland. In our two previous episodes, we learned all about the ins and outs of High Life and the crossover between business and academic research. Please go and check out the episodes if you haven't already.
Yes, please. As for this episode, we're going to talk about a very important part of development of a researcher all throughout their career, and that is mentoring.
That's right. And to guide us through this topic, or should I say mentor, we are joined by Eero Kastrin, the Research Director of the Neuroscience Centre at High Life, and Olli Pietilainen.
Yes.
A senior group leader within the Neuroscience Centre at High Life. Welcome both. How are you today?
Fine. Very good.
Great. Thank you for having us here.
Great. And to start the conversation, we'll just ask a nice and simple question. What is mentorship?
Mentorship is interaction between scientists, typically more experienced and less experienced scientists, but it could actually be also, you know, at the same level, or it could even be that a younger scientist mentors the more advanced scientist, as long as the one who is being mentored learns something important about being scientist.
That's a very interesting way to put it. I've never heard actually of the case of younger scientists mentoring somebody above them, at least in the position. So could you give some examples? Like, was it something that from personal experience, for example, or?
I cannot tell an example here, but I mean, that's completely conceivable.
Yeah, I guess that it's essentially that if someone is more experienced in something, so then it gives an opportunity to mentor if it's some kind of a teaching moment.
I mean, I guess at Science Basement, one thing that we try and mentor all people of career stages is science communication. So this could be one.
There's also things like that it means a lot of different things probably for different people, and one can think about mentorship in a lot of different ways, that it can be this more like tutoring type of thing or short interactions, or then it can be something that builds in for a long time and there's actual kind of a relationship forming between two people and it's like a long-lasting thing, a mentorship in that sense. And in some ways, I personally like to make that distinction, even though I think that it's very personal how you view it and how you feel it.
Yeah, and I think oftentimes mentorship is confused with supervision, but we shouldn't really mix them up. I feel like mentorship or mentoring is more of a personal relationship and has more of a broader career advancements support in that field. Supervisor perhaps is more of a professional relationship and task-oriented.
Supervision is more sort of formal. There is some sort of formal relationship when you are supervising something, whereas mentoring is more sort of voluntary. Often mentoring is on something that you can only see in the retrospect. So afterwards you realize that you have been mentored. And that's what I mean, is that it could happen also with the younger mentoring the older one. I mean, it could be very short. You meet somebody and then this person says something that helps you in a way that you would consider that mentoring. That has happened to me several times.
Supervision, I personally think it more as a kind of a subgroup of mentoring in some ways. It's true that supervision is not necessarily mentoring, and there's a lot of like a teaching component to it. And of course, the supervisor is also the kind of superior in some ways. And so it's not exactly mentoring kind of situation, but then in an optimal situation, I think that the supervisor can be a mentor as well. And one person can have different roles. And it depends on these roles and situations, how it goes. At least like my personal experience with mentorship is that my supervisors have been really important mentors for my career all the time.
Okay, and following that then, what would you say makes a good mentor? And what skills are important?
I think it's not really possible to answer that question because it is about interaction between people. And one thing that is important, mentoring is not therapy. So mentor is not a therapist. It does not mean that when you have been mentored, you come out happy and relieved or revealed. On the contrary, you might be coming out crying. But nevertheless, in retrospect, you have learned something fundamental, something important about this process, in a sense that actually becomes mentorship. So very ruthless people can actually be good mentors. In the mentorship, you have to be thinking about the advantage of the person who is being mentored. So if this person is lost and still thinking that I'm doing fine, then it may be that you have to be rather ruthless to guide this person to a right track. And then it's up to the person to take it or leave it.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot exactly that comes from the person, that it's about the person and it's about that person's goals and what the mentee needs. An important thing is I feel that it's a lot to do with coaching, that it's kind of a coaching that mentor does not necessarily offer the solution. Or even when giving advice, it's not really about that, but it's rather guiding the person to find their way. And what is really important is that the mentor doesn't too much impose their own views or ambition or own goals to the other person, but let the mentee find their own way, which is very important. Actually, I think very difficult as well, but that's really a key thing there.
Supervision is giving you sort of formal skills and knowledge about the field, but mentorship is actually teaching you what is it to be a scientist. So it is more sort of a way of life that you have to take. And there are lots of scientists that really don't know at all what it is to be a scientist.
But would you say that, is it possible for a supervisor also be a mentor?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you think it would interfere in the relationship? Or would you say it actually is encouraged to be also a mentor? Because at least while reading some in articles, I noticed that there's such a clear distinction and say like the supervisor is for this and mentor is for that. But to me, I feel like it really benefits in my supervisor and supervisee relationship if there is some kind of mentoring element involved in it.
I think that they can be both. And I think that it's about what are the roles, and they can definitely be both. Not necessarily always. So that's dependent on the relationship between the mentor and mentee. How does it go? I think that it goes to what Eero also said earlier, that when thinking about the kind of chemistry between people, that's really the defining factor there, whether it works or whether it doesn't, and whether the mentor wants to mentor and whether the mentee wants to be mentored. It kind of needs to have this kind of mutual agreement on in order for that to happen. But it's also true that, say, a scientist, like a supervisor in academia, is not capable in mentoring for a career, say, outside academia, for example, in industry, necessarily.
Yeah, I think it would be really unfortunate if you do not consider your supervisor as your mentor. So then it means that something has gone wrong in this relationship. I mean, these things happen. That you end up and you said you have learned a lot of skills or something, but you consider that that is not the way I want to do in the future. And that has happened to me, for example, also. So then you need to sort of find new ways. In a sense, maybe that is also something to have me mentored, understanding that, okay, he's doing this way, that way, I don't want to do it that way. Yeah. But so this is sort of negative mentoring.
Yeah. And so in terms of High Life, how does High Life apply these principles to mentoring new scientific talents? What initiatives do you have to support early career researchers?
High Life is a research institute, and so as such, High Life cannot directly offer a good mentorship relationship because of it's so much to do with the two people that are in that relationship. But what I think that the most important thing that an institute can do is to offer the community, that the most important thing for enabling people to have a network, to have a people that they can interact with, and that kind of catalyzes the kind of formation of potential mentorship relationships. And then time will show if those form or not.
And what about the lab level? How do you approach this mentorship as well, and on like smaller scale?
I can't imagine that you would say that, okay, now let's get you mentored here. Let's sit down and mentor. So, I mean, that is something that happens more sort of informally, maybe. And then it is based on a need. Mentoring students or scientists at different level is quite different. The mentoring that you give to an, you know, undergrad student who is thinking whether he would or she would go for science to start the PhD program, that's very different from something that you would say to then a postdoc at the stage that these postdocs are looking for their first PI position. Or what that you would actually tell to, you know, maybe younger PI, you know, in trouble in their career, or asking for what should I do with this grant application and things like that. So there are very, very different things. And actually mentoring is something that typically happens at the transition. So between transitions, it's supervision. So then you supervise your PhD students, but then when they transition into either leaving the academia or going to postdoc, that's where mentoring is then coming into play.
Can you also say that not only in transition, but also during more difficult situations or difficult periods in your career, for example, if you're doing a PhD and there's this rough patch, you know, that you're going through, then a mentor would come in and help you go through this, at least from my experience. Yeah, I realized also afterwards, like, that I was being mentored and I was being helped. And it was not necessarily just a practical approach of just sitting in the lab and like showing me what to do, but it's also on other levels.
I mean, if your supervisor is treating you wrong, there should be a formal process to take care of that. I mean, I don't think that mentoring can replace such a formal process. You know, you have to correct things so that somebody feels that he or she is being mistreated for some reason. But, I mean, it could very well happen that you are in this situation that you don't know how to deal with this. And then, you know, you meet somebody and then, you know, with discussion that solves the problem. I guess then that's actually very good mentoring.
And another thing is about mentoring at other levels, because I was at one conference before and had this organized breakfast with some younger PIs, and she recommended me first things, like, if you ever become a PI, just find yourself a mentor who will help you and guide you through this. Like, just do this as a first thing.
At the time that you're starting your lab, that's where you need the mentorship most, because there are lots of things that you do not learn as a postdoc. You need supervision in order to become a scientist is something that you definitely benefit from mentorship.
And probably once you're at this higher level, you're expected so much that people probably assume that, oh, but they already know this much, or they can manage by themselves. So they maybe not necessarily are actively offering this help.
It's a very big gap and leap when you move from being a postdoc to being a PI, and there is so much more responsibilities that come that never touched you before that. That's really the place where one needs support actually quite a lot, that it's just because you have grown as a scientist, but there's other things that you then have to start taking care of, like supervision, for example, or mentoring other people, or budgets, or essentially just planning and deciding what we're going to do in this lab. It's actually a lot of mental toll that it takes on people. And so it's very important to have someone to reflect on that.
When I was starting my lab in Kuopio in AI Virtanen Institute, soon after we started, like 1 year or something, we had a review board that comes then regularly to review us. And Erkki Ruoslahti, who is one of the best known scientists in Finland, he was from California, actually. He's been there for decades. So he was the chair of the review board. And then after this, I mean, it was like coffee break or something like that. We just sort of discussed there. And then he said that from his perspective, you know, this is sunny California and this is mid-90s Kuopio. They are different places. So then he said that, oh, yes, these days, now that you can communicate with people with... Okay, then it was actually like fax or something. I mean, the internet was not really there yet. So that now it is possible actually that you can maintain the enthusiasm and excitement even in, when you're located in a more peripheral place. And what I sort of learned from there is that the most important thing as a PI is to maintain your excitement and maintain your interest in what you're doing. Because if you lose that, if you get cynical, then you lose everything. And then it's going to reflect on your students and postdocs. So that was mentoring. I don't think if you asked him, have you ever mentored me? He would certainly say, no, I hardly know him. But that was one of the most important sort of events of mentorship that I have had.
A core memory.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, if somebody at any level, maybe even undergrad or to a new PI, is looking for a mentor, would you suggest a certain way of finding one? Or is it kind of just asking around and seeing if who is more responsive kind of thing, or what would you suggest?
I think it's a difficult question, actually. For me, all mentor relationship has formed organically in kind of just unannounced in a similar way as Eero described. And there's a lot of these mentorship moments from career from really wise people, in my opinion. That said, I do think that there's a value for having kind of mentorship programs where people can actually actively try to find people to help them with their problems or questions and so on. But it's just then dependent on that you find the right one for you who has the kind of wisdom that you need at that moment, the experience that you need.
You just try. I think that's the best thing. And don't be shy at asking for help or advice. That's the way you go to talk to people, and then you kind of see whom not to go again and whom to go again. You know, I think it's better to have several mentors because they bring different aspects and they could be even conflicting aspects. Even that helps you to see that there are different solutions to it, that I can find a personal solution that fits best for myself. Of course, I mean, I think it's best to go to talk to people that have done well. I mean, if you're somebody who never actually published many papers, I don't think that it's worthwhile asking these people for mentoring. But that's one indication. But that doesn't mean that it would actually sort of work out. I think that's what we can do at the Life Science, is to encourage and emphasize for the PIs also to sort of be open to mentoring and taking it as part of their job, that they would take time also for that. I think that is something that's important. But you cannot say that, okay, we have this list of people and now we find a mentor here. You know, this is your mentor. Go to this room.
But I think for most people, especially when they're early in their career, they just feel very shy to approach, especially if the mentor they're seeking for is a postdoc or somebody of a higher position. So maybe in a way, these programs that Oli mentioned are like a good start, you know? It's just maybe they won't find the perfect mentor, but they will at least guide them in the right direction or give them a bit more courage to like tell them like, okay, well, maybe you should approach someone else. That would be mentorship on its own as well.
Here is an example of that I was mentored. So when I went my first postdoc, my Finnish colleague, he told me that when you go to a place, look around and find the most important person in that room and go to talk to that person. That was wonderful advice. I have actually consciously followed that advice many times. You would say, okay, I cannot go to talk to these people because he's
my
so well known.
Exactly.
But if you go, it often turns out that they are really nice people. And you can, I mean, the first time that I applied that rule, this became a lifelong friendship with this person. That time I have met dozens of times. They came to my home and unfortunately he passed away recently, but it was a long time friendship and many opportunities for mentoring after that.
That's really nice. And I guess one thing is that, especially more early career researchers, it can be quite intimidating. But I guess one thing to remember is these people were at the same point as you were at some time. They're still people in that sense. And most people do like having discussions and find it nice when you come and ask them a question and things. So
if I had to sort of boil down what is my profession, it is about raising scientists. And then mentoring, of course, is at the very, you know, center of that thing. So then if young people come there, it actually is an opportunity to practice your profession rather than looking down onto them.
I mean, we can make such a huge impact by supervising and by mentoring and training a new generation of scientists and helping people out, that's truly an impact for science and probably lives much longer than most of the work that we do as scientists, because time is so brutal for research sometimes. I would want to maybe add, you asked earlier about what are the qualities of a mentor, and something that really I think that are like in the core of the thing, that the mentor needs to have an interest on the mentee, that really wanting to mentor that person. I think that this all very much boils down to what Eero has been saying as well, that that person needs to have wisdom. And I think that that's a tricky word, of course, that what does wisdom mean? But I do think that it's something that comes from the experience of that person. It comes from the person that has an outlook and vision to the field, that understanding, like a greater understanding of how things are going and some kind of opinion about that. And so then you are really kind of benefiting from a mentor if you find that kind of person that can help you.
Yeah, and I think also going back to a point that Eero made earlier was saying that speaking to many people, I think from my experience anyway, if I'm not sure on something, even if it's a scientific question in my research or kind of more of a general, how to tackle a more general issue, I find it more very helpful to ask different people their opinions. And then, because in the scientific sense, I guess I know the issue the best. So if I get some different opinions from different people, then they might have different outlooks or different experiences. And then I can kind of use this mentorship in a way to make my own decision. But it's nice to have different opinions, because then you can really think about it from different perspectives as well.
If you don't get overwhelmed with those, because I also encountered this issue, like too many opinions, I can't make my mind.
I remember I met an Italian professor in the United States, and I know many people that have been supervised. They were their postdocs and students of this person, and he was rather ruthless person. And so his sort of motto that he was saying is that the leadership is not a popularity contest. You know, what is important is that even though they were afraid of him, very much afraid of him, and in the end, people that were in this lab, their careers were advanced. So they would get better places because they were in that lab. That's part of being mentor. The events may not be pleasant, but in any case, you actually do learn things and you get your career advanced. And that, I think, is in the interest of the person who is being mentored.
And I guess you can have, in that case, different mentors for different things. Say you're finding it hard to deal with a situation with a supervisor or something, then you have somebody else to talk to about that kind of diplomacy type of things. But then in this case, as you say, even if it's a bit more ruthless leadership, you're obviously still learning a lot from it, and you might be having to be more precise in your science because someone's questioning you in a certain way. So I think that can be a very good way of summarizing why you can have different mentors in different situations.
It's absolutely like that. And there is an important thing that a lot of PhDs are trained, a lot of doctorates, and people have different views for their careers and what they want to do. And that's something that has to be taken into account also in mentorship. That's really important, actually. And I'm just going to repeat it. The mentor has to also be careful not to implement too much of their own goals to the person, but there has to be understanding of that. What do you want to do? People have different kind of levels of ambition and goals, what they want to do.
I guess it's more of a discussion.
Exactly. And also, at the end of the day, you can have a mentor, but then the work is something that you have to do yourself. Like, mentor can only do so much, but then it actually comes from the person, from the mentee, to implement then those things, like going to talk to the person in a conference, the most important person in the conference, and so on. So those are, of course, then on the responsibility of the mentee then to implement those.
I'm going to a conference this Sunday, so I might as well just start using this rule.
Try it. I recommend it.
It sounds very challenging, but I'll try. Might as well let you know afterwards. But I think now that you were mentioning also the supervisor, there was mentioned leadership point. So we shouldn't probably confuse leadership then and mentorship, or does leadership include part of mentoring in its own?
Yeah, I guess those concepts They are interrelated. And leadership often, I think, what you mean with it is something sort of bigger. There could be a leadership of the research group that would include both mentoring and supervision. But often leadership is then considered, you know, like leader of the institute or something like that. That would then have also other sort of aspects to it.
And Olli, you also mentioned the importance of community nurturing the mentoring. So how exactly can institutions like High Life or some other ones improve the community then and the whole situation so that, I don't know, students feel more comfortable finding mentors or people are more willing to support and be mentors themselves?
Yeah, building a community is a really important question and a difficult question. I think that it all comes from an institute, first of all, having a lot of informal gatherings, allowing people to mingle and interact, but not losing the focus of what brings people together, which is science and the thing that they do together. So we shouldn't lose focus of that. And that's actually the glue. The glue is people. We're all interested in these things. And so then that's the main thing. But we can have these kind of free interactions around that that will enable these kind of things. I think that major things that institutes or organizations like High Life can do is to offer postdocs, postdoc retreats, PhD retreats. I'm not a big fan even putting people in these different bins. I think that people all should be kind of interacting together. That said, of course, there are different kinds of needs for postdocs. They're at different career stage. But still, I think that it's very important that people interact together. For example, in High Life, we have these kind of grants and funding that we offer, like a fellowship for master students that they can do a four-month period in a research group and essentially come and see and come and experience that and kind of have an introduction to the scientific community in that sense and getting access. And that's actually maybe because we were talking about that, how do you go and meet the people? This is one way that then you're in a group, you meet a potential supervisor, all the people in the group, and you can interact. You can find your mentor. You can maybe be motivated, be amazed in a way that you want to continue on this. And so these kind of things a department or institute can offer.
Some time ago, I was on a sabbatical in the US and I was talking a lot to students. And what I realized is that there is a big difference between American students and Finnish students, especially. I don't know, I mean, about you guys, but you know, here people tend to take education much more passively. They think that education is something it is imposed onto them. And they have to sort of take it. And then, you know, the less you can do about it, the better for this. Whereas there, they see this as an opportunity. You're given an often actually unusual opportunity to develop yourself and take the best out of this short period. That is an attitude that actually encourages you to go and take the best out of it and go to talk to people, to learn new things. And that actually is something that I would like to see much more here.
Yeah, that's great. One of the things I guess that are also in the core of High Life within the University of Helsinki is to kind of supplement the core teaching that is given by the faculties. And essentially, I think, giving this kind of research intensive studies for people or so that they can actually do this kind of thing. They can seize the moment and seize the day and kind of take the responsibility of their own studies and do what they want.
Yeah, but I think Olli was saying something really important there, because I think that, you know, mentoring is about science and it is about an effort to make each other better scientists. It's not about training how to arrange parties to your students to have them have fun. That may be a skill in itself, but that's not mentoring. The quality of science is really the principal thing. If it's not there, then the rest of it is completely useless.
I guess you can say if you agree or disagree, but one thing that springs to my mind, going back to right to the beginning, saying that you can be mentored at any stage of your career, is that I guess never assume that someone is not going to be able to mentor you or give you some good advice, because I guess you never know in a certain situation that someone might be able to give you something that you weren't expecting, even if they were much higher or even much lower career stage than you, or even a different career, for example.
Yeah, it's about the vigorous culture also, that vigorous culture of science and an active culture of science, that if there's a lot of presentations, if there's a lot of talks where people get to talk about the most fun part, their own work. And you have the people listening there. You have people from all different stages. You have the institute directors, you have the PIs, you have the postdocs. That generates the excitement, and people will come to talk to you if they're interested in what you're doing. And that really generates this kind of good science and good research and innovation, even whatever that means, within the institute.
Perhaps I will steer the conversation a little bit to the side, but speaking of ruthlessness and maybe encouraging more active participation and maybe different style of work from passive to more active, do you think that would also breed more stress for people, that it would create more pressure maybe to produce certain results in a specific amount of time? Maybe increase more stress from the competition, because of course competition is always stressful, you want to win. So how would you address this if you want to encourage more active participation and increase in the quality of science, but also it's extremely difficult to balance this out with like work life and mental state and all these kinds of things?
I think that a lot of anxiety comes from uncertainty, that you don't know what you're supposed to do. What is it that you do? Is what I'm doing, is that, does that make any sense? Is this useful? Why am I wasting my time? Or is anybody happy with what I'm doing? And that's actually where you need supervision and mentoring in order to get out of that, so that you have a clear vision of what is it that you're expected to do. You would be in many cases then very happy to strive and do a lot of work in to get that. I mean, if you are asked too much, that's a different thing. And then that may be a place where, again, mentoring is needed, but maybe also mentoring of the supervisor. But I think that there are different kinds of stress. I mean, one stress is that you are required to do too much. I mean, you're trying to do too much. And the other one is that you really don't know what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's like a double thing that you're doing. On one hand, you're doing your degree, and on the other hand, you're doing science and research to the whole scientific community that you aim to publish. It's a competitive field in some ways, but at the same time, it's actually a very collaborative field as well, and it's kind of supposed to be very open as well. So it's kind of a dual thing that you need to finalize your studies in a certain time period. And in some ways, academia is this one tube where people move in. But at the same time, there's this bigger thing that we're actually doing, and what actually should be the main focus of every research group is to do as good science as they ever can do, and as rigorous and good research as they ever can do. And that's really something to kind of live up for.
And that can be fun.
And that can be fun. It is actually.
And I was going to say as well, going back to Anastasia's point about the work-life balance, often to do good science, you have to have more of a balance, because in a lot of senses, I find at least, going away from it and coming back to it makes it much easier and more enjoyable, because you have some time to actually digest things instead of doing a lot all at once.
To me, it was a little bit awkward usually to name this work-life balance, because I consider my work as a part of a hobby, so it doesn't really feel like work. So I usually feel guilty of calling this a work, but
yeah. I think for me, I got mentorship for this kind of thing from people outside of academia, because I think in academia it's very hard to have such a balance, because of, like you say, a lot of people enjoy it. I think for me, people who maybe see their jobs as more of a job and they work to live, not live to work, it can be good to in this situation.
Like Eero said earlier, but research is the way of living, and it's not a profession in a classical way in that you go at 8 and you leave at 4 necessarily, but you keep on thinking things. People have different ways of managing their time as well. I mean, there's a lot of expectations and there's always more to do, and you can always do more in some ways, but then the key really is to try to find your way to react to the stress.
In the end, it is voluntary. It's sometimes good to take a sort of existential look at things. There is nobody and there is nothing that forces me to do these things. I'm doing them voluntarily. I could quit today. I mean, it's not a prison.
Yeah.
So we are doing that in that sense voluntarily. And that may also help you to take a fresh look at it.
That definitely helps me.
Yeah. It's a privilege.
Yeah. And also there's different careers as well. I think one thing about academia is not for everybody. So even in your master's, if you have, going back to mentorship, somebody who or you see different people, PhDs, you think, oh, this lifestyle is not for me, then you know from that.
And that is also an important thing for mentoring. I mean, if there are students that likely don't make it, it's actually better to quit early than late.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you can also have a lot of careers that are still very much linked to academia, and it's not a black and white or all or nothing situation. What are your favourite aspects of being a mentor? And then
what is fun about it and what is challenging about it? It depends on who is it.
Yeah.
Because it is a personal relationship, and that is, I think, the best part of it. It is that it is a relationship between two humans. You know, the mentor should think about the advantage of this person that is being mentored. So that even if it might actually mean that you have to suggest some quite rough suggestions, but if you believe that this is on a long run in the best interest of this person, then you should do that, and you should not shy away of that. That's, of course, challenging.
Yes. Okay, so to finish up with, I guess, one last question, and as a maybe take-home message for everybody who listening who might want to be looking to improve how they mentor, what kind of one piece of advice would you give to somebody who's looking to improve the way in which they mentor or kind of consider with their mentoring?
Go for it.
Nice. Short, concise.
That sounds like a good advice. I guess that's a good advice. Okay. I'm just going to use the same one. Yeah, I can't come up with one good.
Okay.
Go for it. Yeah.
Okay, lovely. Thank you both, Ero and Ollie, very much for taking the time to join us here at the Science Basement podcast today. It has been very interesting to learn all about mentorship from both of your experiences in being mentored and actually being a mentee in that sense. And I hope you both enjoyed the discussion today.
It was excellent. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for having us here.
Yes, I feel like we were being mentored today as well.
Yeah,
so
I feel like that too.
Thank you.
A mentoring experience all around. And lastly, thank you also to our listeners. Keep looking out for our new episodes on the podcasting platform of your choice, where our next episode of the High Life mini-series will be about leadership in science, which I guess we touched on today, actually. So
it's an aperitivo.
Yeah. That's all for today. So thanks, Ero, Ollie and Anastasia, of course, for joining us. I've been Rhiannon Newman, and this was the Science Basement podcast, and see you in the next episode. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The Science Basement!
If you liked this episode, give it a thumbs up, rate it on the podcast app of your choice, and don't forget to share it with your friends. This podcast was produced by The Science Basement, a science communication organization based in Helsinki, Finland. Interested in being involved or interviewed? Get in touch at the podcast@thesciencebasement.org.